Welcome, listeners, to a brand new episode, bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. And today, special treat, we are going behind the scenes of Human Again, which is a Beauty and the Beast retelling and part of my End of Ever After series. Now, bum, 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 we have done this once before, gone behind the scenes of one of my books, and that was Silhouettes, and that's actually the first bonus episode ever. So now we're going behind the scenes of Human Again, because it was just released as an audiobook. Hooray! With the most incredible narrator reader, Chuck Wagner, who's highly talented. And we just did an interview with him. That's the last bonus episode. So once this episode is done, you could go back to all the other places to hear from Chuck. That's last week's episode. Or you could go all the way back to the first bonus episode to go behind the scenes of Silhouettes. So we're just going to talk about just a few things about the book and just to give... just talk about just different choices that were made and why the story was told the way it was told. Now, this book is the fourth installment, I guess you could call it, in the End of Ever After series. End of Ever After series right now has 5 books in it. It's officially done, but you know, who knows? And the first one is the Cinderella book. That's the Cinderella retelling. Then there's the Rumpelstiltskin retelling. The Little Mermaid retelling. There's now the Beauty and the Beast retelling. And the last book is the Snow White retelling. Overall, I kind of refer to this series, it was actually my editor who called it like a memoir style retelling, and I was sort of calling it like the anti-fairy tale retelling. Not necessarily because it was about ripping everything apart and just bringing everything down, but a lot of the books do have a little bit of a darker spin to them, and the main goal of this was looking at all these fairy tales and just saying, I have questions. There are things that need to be addressed about the way some of these stories are told. And for all of them, I went back to the original tales. I looked into some of them have different origins in different countries. You look at all the different versions. You do see what Disney did with them. And then what I wanted to do was expand the story from there. So if you take away all the parts that I added or that I changed, or that I tweaked, I don't want to say changed, that I tweaked, you'll still see the original tale there. So this is not a retelling that takes place in a different time or place per se than the original telling, even though different names and different locations, but it's almost like the expanded version and a little bit of a darker version. And one of the main things was we're going to kind of flip the narrative that we're pretending everything is, you have these people who go through these terrible situations and then we're going to pretend like everything's all like hunky-dory afterwards. No, it's not the way it goes. People don't just see each other and they instantly fall in love. They're going to have this beautiful end of after relationship, right? And not in a negative way, but in a way of relationships require work. Love at first sight is not enough. That's just a starting point, or I just call it attraction at first sight is not enough. Or, you know, if there's these spells and curses that are being cast on some of these characters, that's going to affect them. And they're not just going to magically come away from that, even though I guess maybe they could because it's magic. That was a big thing for the Cinderella one, is that you're going to tell me that she was a servant in her own home, that she goes to marry the prince, and there's no lingering effects from the way she was treated. So that's kind of that's the Cinderella one, which we'll talk about hopefully a different time. So right now we're focusing on the Beauty and the Beast. This one, the first 3 books are all told from the girl / the princess's point of view. And Human Again and Heart of a Hunter, which is the Snow White retelling, are both told from the prince's point of view, or from the male's point of view, which already I thought was kind of an interesting flip, because a lot of times most of these stories are often retold either with 2 POVs or usually from the woman's point of view, or from a general narrative point of view. And I thought it was just interesting after doing 3 from the female point of view to flip it to do the male's point of view. Which means that there's so much more to be told because there's so much that we can't see depending on who's telling the story, right? Now, this book, I don't really remember why I specifically chose Beauty and the Beast. I guess it had just come to me at that time to focus on the story, especially because it's one of the characters that's kind of mentioned in the Cinderella telling. In the Cinderella retelling, which was the first book. Now, these books are all companions novels, which means that they're not chronologically in order, that one follows the other. Their timelines overlap each other. So technically, theoretically, they could be read or now listened to in any order, even though I would recommend the order of publication just because as the stories go on, certain parts of worlds were developed more, or certain things are said that may or may not be a little bit of a spoiler alert. Well, spoiler for other books, even though I still think they can all be read it's okay. It's like what's told, because it's not, a lot of it's not explained, because that's part of the fairy tale, is that there's the fairy tale that we tell the people, and now these characters are going to tell the truth about what really went on. So the fairy tale we tell the people is kind of like Disney, or what's, even Grimm's fairy tales were dark. That would I call the fairy tale we tell the people. And then these books are like, here's what really happened. So Beauty and the Beast is looking at sort of this question of, what if the Beast didn't actually turn into the Beast, but what if he was just a person who had like this beast inside of him? That was kind of the starting point for the story. And it was also this idea that if he gets cursed to be this beast, or whatever this curse that's going to be upon him, it's going to have a side effect. It's going to have a lingering effect. It, even once the curse is broken, he's still going to be affected by what he went through, either living as the beast or having this beast inside of him. It's not something that's just going to automatically go away, because reality doesn't usually work like that. When people are trying to overcome, in this case, the beast is kind of like the demons inside of him that he's trying to overcome. Even once the person overcomes those and they can, and they quiet them per se, or they control them, they're still there. And there's still always a risk of them coming back. So that's kind of what happens here. Now, unfortunately, this beast, Azar, kind of turned into a little bit, he's not exactly my most favorite character because of this. He's not, if you really look at him and you look at the way he turned out, which I didn't really expect it to go in that direction, but it did. So that's just the fun of being a writer. He's kind of actually a weak character, because a lot of the way he sees himself is actually rooted in the way other people see him. He talks a lot about, you know, from the outset, he was the second son. He had an older brother. The older brother was supposed to be the heir. He was going to take over the kingdom, and he was going to be the general. He was going to be kind of, you know, the right-hand man, the person who was going to conquer and keep the country strong. Delph, and that's the name of the kingdom they live in. And then his brother, who he absolutely adores, and he looks up to him and really respects him, and who always protected him from his father. We don't ever see the father physically abusing him, but there's a little bit of, I guess you could say, kind of verbal abuse and just not appreciation for him. So he kind of starts, and then because his mother, he sort of references it, that his mother never interfered in his father's treatment of him, he started to see himself like, oh, maybe I'm not worth fighting for. Which is obviously not a healthy or good thing to think, but this is the specific character. So, oh, there's going to be spoilers. So here we go. The brother dies unexpectedly, and that causes obviously a deep pain within Azar. It causes an anger starts to grow in him, and it's a void. There's a void that's left by the brother's absence. Now, anyone who's unfortunately gone through any sort of life situation, like such a negative life situation, there's different ways that people react to it. So the way that the prince in this story reacts to it, he becomes very angry, and he's very full of fear. And there's this emptiness that opens inside of him from his brother's absence, this brother who he looked up to and all this kind of stuff. Instead of filling that with something meaningful or purposeful or trying to deal with it, or, you know, let's control the absence. Instead, he creates something to control his feeling of fear and anger at his brother's absence, of why was he taken and why I got thrust now into this role that I don't want. And I'm now being forced this life that I don't want to live. And he sees himself not just as the replacement. He thinks that everyone else sees him that way too, because his father's so brokenhearted, you know, from losing a son, his mother, he has his two younger sisters, the youngest one is eventually born, and he now just sees everybody's just a replacement part, basically. And it is some of the actions of his father, that his father tries to ensure that the crown will stay within the family in case something happens, you know, something like that happens, he's going to take an action to protect the family in case something like that happens again. So Azar just starts to see himself as someone like on an inevitable track of disappointment and failure and different things like that, which is also why when he does sort of start to sort of recover, come back to himself, that's because when Kiara, who's Belle in the story, her name is Kiara, when she first comes in, she doesn't see any of that because she doesn't know any of this. She comes in and she just sees, you know, a prince, or just like a tall, well, she doesn't know he's a prince. She comes in and sees just this, you know, well-dressed gentleman. So she can now see him as someone who, like, is the way he should be seen, almost. And because she sees that in him, that sort of starts to change his own self-perception to say, hey, maybe there is something to be seen within me. Even though he doesn't ever fully fulfill that potential or doesn't fully embrace that, because there's always that fear and that anger that he's created in that void. And that's something that he doesn't, that he never fully gets over and gets past. Because why? Within this anger and this void, he creates the beast, right? So this is where the beast comes into the story. And it's created even before the curse starts. Because for him, the beast, which is him lashing out in anger and him expressing his fear through this like beast and like monstrous behavior, that's how he protects himself from the anger and the fear that he feels. Because in his mind, the beast is invincible and he can do invincible things. The beast is full of power without conscience. Not unconscious, but like without a conscience. There's no remorse or regret. There's no regret or remorse when he's in beast mode, right? And beast mode is this all-powerful. He's a large person. He's a strong person. We see him going to school. We see what he does to students there and things like that. Beast mode means I am protected now and nothing can harm me and nothing can ever be taken away from me as beast. Which is why when the curse does occur, which if you want to look at the book, that's on page 47, when that occurs, the curse that the fairy casts on him, you know, after he doesn't let her in from the rain and all that kind of stuff, the curse that she says is, she says, I'm going to take away your control over this beast that you've created. And I'm going to stack the odds against you because I want you to fight this beast you've created. And I want you to overcome the beast you've created. And the curse is obviously made out of anger, which is like, I was angry and then she cursed me in anger. So it's a vicious cycle we've entered into because obviously anger and fear are not the way to go. And we don't want to feed those things. But she cursed them by taking away the control. That she says, you know, you've created this. This is what you rely upon. And this is how you lash out through this. So now you're going to be subjected to it. You're turning this on yourself now. And you're going to see what it is to live under and with this beast. Even though, you know, he gets banished to a castle where he has to try to fight this. He has a small group of servants that are with him. And he does lash out against them. And he turns everybody's lives are miserable. And his own life is miserable because he has to battle for control now. And there's this tiny, tiny part of him that doesn't actually want to control the beast. Because for him, the beast is protection against the void and against the fear and the anger. That's kind of the direction that I went with this. And that's also why we have this scene that happens on page 220, which we have this character, Yarrow. You might recognize him from the Rumpelstiltskin retelling. And he comes out again in the Heart of the Hunter telling. So he's a magical, and he's one of the few people who actually understands and sees what happens to Azar, and he understands kind of what he's going through, but he's also one of the only people who will tell him to his face, the reason why you're cursed, and this is the curse that you're going through, is for this reason. And there's this moment in this scene on page 220 where after he goes to war and et cetera, all these things happen, right? He kind of puts his hand over his heart to say, this is, and he gives him a moment of feeling tranquility and peace. And he says, you see this is what it feels like, you know, without this curse over you. He's basically saying, this is what you can achieve by regaining control and by getting rid of this beast. But then underneath the quiet and the tranquility and the calm that he feels, there's like this slight stirring that Azar realizes is happening inside of him. And he's like, you know, what is this stirring? What are you trying to tell me with this? And he's saying, you know, you're relying on Kiara, you're relying on other people to break the curse for you. You're relying on other people to break this curse that's taken away control. But once you're going to be back in control, that doesn't get rid of the beast. Getting rid of the beast is all on you, right? And you have to choose that. You have to choose to say that this fear, I'm going to deal with the fear and the anger instead of just saying I'm going to create this force that makes me feel invincible, like the power without conscience. That's also part of why I went back and forth with expressing his anger as either something that's going to be hot, like a fiery hot anger, which is kind of usually how we describe anger, or something fiery and because it's usually from passion and things like that. Instead, I went here with cold anger, right? Which is like remorselessness. It's the denial of so many things, which is kind of what the void and what the beast was born in. It's coldness. And he says, you know, I'm going to create this cage of ice around my heart is basically what he's doing with the beast. And that the fairy cursed him to say, like, you made this cage of ice. I'm not going to let you break it. I'm trapping you within it. That's why also, all pleasure, when you talk about anger that's from passion and things like that, someone can still experience and enjoy life from that in a way, right? Because it's an anger of passion. So this is still living in life. Coldness means that you can't enjoy anything anymore. Yes, anger does, and bitterness takes away from that, but coldness, that's a bitterness and an anger and all these things, That's why he has no taste. He has no taste in the sense of food is not enjoyable to him anymore. There's no pleasure in the world around him. And music, his joy in music was also taken away from him. Even though he sort of took it away from himself by creating a coldness toward the world and toward living. And music particularly, music's the pen of the soul, and that's part of how he bonds with Kiara over music and things like that. Both of them have this moment, because I'm sort of moving back and forth because the story does follow the regular story, that you have a merchant that comes, and then the daughter comes to take the place. So it happens a little bit different, but it's kind of the way it goes. The daughter comes to take the place. And one thing they realize is that they both have a different reaction and way of dealing with evil. So when Kiara was first written into the story, which also she has to be there, she was a little bit of a flat character, a little bit bland. And my editor really pushed me to say, you got to get a backstory. Kiara, because why is Kiara sticking around? Why is she fighting for Azar? Why does she even like fall for him or anything like that? There has to be something that she's seeing or something that she's gone through to say, I know kind of the battle that you're facing, and let's fight it together. So that's why we did create a whole backstory for her. And this was part of the question of how, that my editor asked me, like, how dark do you want to go with this Beauty and the Beast retelling? Because at first I was like, oh, it's going to be so dark. She's like, yeah, but how dark? Like, are we going to abuse? Because I did have originally Azar strikes Kiara. In the book, it's only once, but originally it was going to be multiple times. And then actually the publisher was like, no, we're not doing abuse. Take it out. So I did. I had to tone that down a little bit. But we said, you know, are there going to be other things that might happen? Is he going to be forceful with Kiara in certain ways? You know, is that the kind of darkness we're going to? And I decided to stay away from that sort of stuff. But we do have, when Kiara first comes in, and you can see he's very obsessive over her. He's also very possessive over her. And it's unhealthy. let's be honest about that. It's unhealthy the way he views her. Like, she's my light and my sun, and all goodness lies within her. Because that also means that he's not realizing that this is something he can also reach, right? It's all, no, goodness is only hers. Not, let's find the goodness within me together sort of thing, which is the original Beauty and the Beast. That's sort of what it is, that there's the girl comes to the castle and there's a beast there, but she finds the humanity within him, and finding that humanity, she helps them to redeem him, right? Let's bring out this humanity in you, and now he can be redeemed. Here, we don't have an actual beast. We have a human who has a beast inside of him who keeps giving into this beast, becomes irrationally angry about things. He does terrible things. He'll rip things apart with his bare hands and all this craziness that occurs. So for him, he just sees, no, Kiara's all goodness. She's the embodiment of goodness and kindness and light and all these things. Instead of saying, I need to find the light and the goodness within myself, I have to revive it. And if it's not there, I have to create it within myself. He tries to rely on, oh, I used to sometimes be nice to people, or, oh, I used to know my servants' names and things like that. But that's not enough. That's not enough. And especially if you're battling against something that's so huge and something that's so monstrous, he has to step up his game. And he doesn't ever really do that, which is why he doesn't ever really get rid of the beast. That's my dark take on things, is that the beast is always going to be something inside of him. And also it's kind of by his choice. Not because the curse isn't broken. The curse has to be broken through acceptance. Someone has to see you're worth redeeming, right? Which again goes back to his own self-perception. And he does see that. He does kind of get Kiara to do that. But there doesn't have to be a reciprocal response to break the curse, right? It's only, oh, someone has to see that you're worth redeeming. But there's never a moment then like, oh, and you also have to redeem yourself. Because remember, it just puts him back in control, but it doesn't get rid of what caused all this to begin with. And that's also, with Kiara's backstory, that also shows in the differences in their perspective on things. Because Kiara is almost like defiant of the evil that occurred in her life. And Azar embraces it. Because again, he sees it as protection. That, oh, I will not have this void anymore. And that's why also they have like the little bit of a scene that they have. It's on page 109 if you see it in the book. They're talking about the, you know, perfection, this idea of what is perfection? Because for Azar, everything has to be perfect, right? When everything is perfect, then we're in absolute control and everything is perfect. You know what happens when you hold your hand in a fist for too long? You get white knuckles and you get crescents in your palm. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't accomplish anything. So for Azar, he thinks, oh, control is about everything being so perfect. So if I can make everything so perfect, nothing can ever hurt me anymore, is kind of what he's thinking, which is also, obviously, it's very unhealthy, which leads him down the path. Kiara is opposite. She says, no, imperfection is perfection, which kind of sounds contradictory. But, you know, the line that she has is, the world that we live in, the mountains have crags and rocks are jagged, lakes are rippled and trees grow crooked limbs, right? Not everything's so straight and perfect. And it's the patterns and it's the disruptions in the perfection that make everything so perfect. It's kind of what, and it's also because she believes in something beyond just human tight control over things. She kind of trusts in the larger picture that Azar can't really trust in. Azar loses his enjoyment and pleasure in music. And Kerem, when she first comes to the palace, to the castle that he's in, we see he takes her to the music room and we see that she kind of has a fondness, well, specifically for the harp in this case. She kind of has a fondness, but she doesn't play. And it's almost like through her time with him that helps almost complete her own recovery and coming back from the evil that she had to deal with, because she does eventually play music again. So she almost has, even though we don't really go into her story so much, she almost has the full arc and she comes around fully and she re-embraces life fully. And he doesn't ever really do that, even though all these things are returned to him. And it's actually, that's why at the end, the anger flips from coldness to heat, because now that he has so much love in his life, right? So it kind of like changed. He has feeling back and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, that beast is still there, because the more you have, the more you have to lose. So he's actually got a pretty negative outlook that he's always focusing on these things. So in many ways, this book, it's almost like a portrayal of what anger and fear can do, how it can tear someone apart, or how it could destroy so much potential. And it's not because it's not validated, right? They've both been through such terrible things, but they both reacted to it differently. And Azar's the main character, and he didn't do the best of jobs in reacting to it. Now, that's also, oh, just some fun facts. There's the one point when Azar first gives Kiara a sheet of music and says, oh, like, you know, check out this music. And he says, she's like, oh, what's it about? You know, I see the differences in the key, you know, what's going on here? And he says, oh, it's about a man fighting within himself. So obviously, you know, he's kind of talking about himself, but it's also, I was thinking of Jekyll and Hyde when I was writing those lines. So that's just fun. And then we actually see Kiara has two sisters, which is actually part of the original tale, that she has two sisters. The Disney version doesn't show that, but the original story shows her with two sisters. And the two sisters that I have here, one's name is Trina, one's name is Liana. But originally it was Lena. And my editor is like, okay, stop with the like rhymey Trina and Lena. So we changed her name to Liana, but they're both based on these really obscure Grimm stories. It's like Fat Trina and Skinny and Slim Lena or something like that. I don't remember what the stories are, but what it originally called, but they're actually based on those characters. And there's sort of references to those original stories in each of their kind of character portrayals. So that was just fun to do. Now, aside of that, you'll see also there's way more tales that are woven into this one, especially when Damien comes in. Damien's the hunter. He's the huntsman from the Snow White telling, and he crosses over. We see him a lot in this book. From all the characters that cross over, we see him a lot in this one. And it's specifically in this one that he's brought into, not just because it's both of the princes, but also to show a contrast between the two characters. Because Damien is someone who also, as a huntsman, is being trained to fight evil. He's part of this elite group of men that serve his queen, etc., all these different things. You have to read Heart of a Hunter to find out more about that, or wait till we go behind the scenes on that one. But the biggest thing is to show the contrast between the two, because even though Damien is also dealing with a lot of evil and the dregs of society, and he's made to be this like finely honed killer, he is someone who does maintain his humanity, and he doesn't ever give in to like the fear and the anger. You know, he doesn't ever create a beast to deal with these things. So that's why it's an interesting contrast. And Azar has a lot of respect for Damien, and he kind of, you know, very much looks up to him. And I had a little bit of fun of playing with the perspectives between the two, both of their books. Damien comes to get refuge from Azar at Azar and his castle. And it's like, oh, he must be doing all this sort of huntsman-y sort of things. And then when you read it from Damien's book, it's like, all I needed to do was just process what had occurred to me. So it's just funny how he sees, oh, he must be so stealth. Everything he's doing is so stealth. And Damien's just like, I just have to think. It just, and also we have that also, when they first meet each other in the dark forest, Azar is just like ripped into a bunch of ogres, and Damien kind of steps in, and Azar realizes something different about him, and he says to him, you know, what manner of man are you? And he tells him, oh, I'm just a man. Which, it's the play on both of the characters and the way they're seeing things, because in Damien's story, there's this recurring theme of just, despite all the things that we can do, and even though we're so powerful and we have magic, you know, we're enhanced by magic and all these things, we are only men. We have to remember, you know, that we are flawed and we are mortal and that we are imperfect. For Azar, his thing, like, oh, I'm just a man, he doesn't see that the same way. For him, like, men are weak, right? And he's always fighting humanity versus the beast and beast versus humanity. That's his battle that he goes through. So it's kind of just this contrast between the two characters and just interesting POVs, point of views that we get from each of them. Because we also have other characters, like we have Prince Alex. He's the prince from the Cinderella story. And he's so outwardly charming and he's so outwardly perfect and all that kind of stuff. But he also kind of has his own beast that he's dealing with. Because he's not a very nice person, which you'll have to read End of Ever After, Cinderella retelling, to find out more about that one. Now, for the ending, the kind of, you know, epilogue ending that I gave to this book, I know it's not really a favorite. I know when I originally wrote it, I know where I went with him, where he talks about how, you know, he has his only son and he pulls back from him and doesn't shower all the love and all that sort of stuff in him. So he basically does to his son what his father did to him. Maybe if I would write it again now, you know, a couple of years later, maybe I would tweak that a little bit and be a little bit nicer to him. But it made sense that for someone who is, well, so weak and so sunk that he won't give up the beast and all these things, it made sense that he would not make a good decision here. Or at least it made sense at the time. And it's not that he leaves his wife and child. It's just that he's now becomes afraid that, you know, this darkness and this poison inside of me, I don't want to poison my son with it. So he's still there and they're all living together and all that sort of stuff. But he's just, he basically gives into fear again. And that's why he's not as good of a father as he could be. Even though for Kiara, he sees himself sort of as being safe with Kiara because of what they've went through together already. So he's not afraid of, you know, what kind of husband I'm going to be. He's afraid of the kind of father he's going to be. And that's why also at the end, he kind of says, he rounds up by saying, I'm writing this story that I hope that my son will see it to understand. You know, I don't know if he could forgive what I did, but I think hopefully he'll understand the fight that I was engaged in and why I can never win it and things like that. So that's why also it ends with saying that, like, you know, Kiara stayed with me and every day she stayed, I kept the beast close because the more she gave, the more I feared for what might be stolen from me again. This is the truth of my fairy tale. A tale as old as time itself. Got that? About a man struggling each and every day just to be a little more human, praying one day to finally be enough. This was a bonus episode of Oh My Word podcast featuring behind the scenes of Human Again, Beauty and the Beast retelling, part of the End of Ever After series. To find out more about Human Again and where you can pick up the book, ebook, or audiobook, please visit eltenabem.com. And to find out more about Oh My Word podcast, please follow us on Instagram, Oh My Word Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Catch you next time.